The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover. That's right. We are Gotham Undercover, and I'm X-Force 11, Jeff, happy to be back again.
And I'm John, a.k.a. the Return of the Substitute, and welcome to Gotham Undercover. We are part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover.
That's right. And it's great to have you back. We've got good news that Karen's got her new soundboard. So she's back on board and just in time with her doing 3GSM podcast. It's, that's a good thing that she's got that technology. But I'm thankful to be joined again by John. It is great to have you here. And we've got fun episode to discuss.
Yeah. We do. I'm happy that Karen's getting back up to speed. There are so many things that are started. I know we're 3 weeks into Gotham already, but you know, this week The Flash has started, and Arrow, and Timeless, and Frequency, I think, is starting. I mean, there's so many great GSM, Beyond Westworld, there's so many great GSM podcasts that are either up underway or getting up underway this week. So, but happy to be here. Thank you, Jeff.
Exactly. So we are discussing Look Into My Eyes, and Look Into My Eyes was written by Danny Cannon, who's an EP on Gotham. So once again, we've got that consistency of having somebody who knows the show writing it and getting a handle on these characters. So that's great.
It is.
It was directed by Rob Bailey, who's done work on CSI New York, a big fan of that show, and he also did work on Three Rivers. So, you know, somebody who's very familiar with how to work with big ensemble casts. So, I think it went really well. What did you give it as far as a rating goes, John?
So I went with 7.5 women that are just too beautiful.
Nice. Yeah. And I went to 8.5 scary sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I just, I felt like, as opposed to last week, I felt like this one was a little bit more of a setup episode, and I usually reserve a higher rating for ones that are a little more action driven, although, you know, this had a lot of merit to it. And to be a setup episode, it was really, really good.
Yeah, I came up on it. It's definitely a setup episode, but I came up on it because even watching it the second time, it's one of those things where I caught little bits and pieces that I missed, and so that's when I came up on it. And I've got to ask you a question. I watched live on Monday nights, and then usually on Tuesdays for my rewatch, I watch it via iTunes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I missed this when I watched it the first time, or maybe it was in iTunes and not on the broadcast, but in the scene after, and we'll get here in the discussion, but in the scene after Five, Clone Bruce, cuts his hair, what happened next? Do you remember?
To my recollection, they broke away to a commercial because, I mean, if you're asking about Five, the next thing we see is just the scissors and the hair and everything sitting there and Alfred and Bruce realizing that he's not there.
Okay. So it must have been just me because I missed that entire scene on the first watch.
Of Alfred and Bruce?
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I missed that entire scene. And so I was like, did they put that in as an extra? But so that's why I'm saying, you know, watching this more than one time, because trying to take notes and do everything. So yeah, it's a good stuff. So let's jump in, and we'll, you know, these kind of storylines kind of weave in together. And I don't have as good a titles as Karen, but we'll talk about the Hatter Hypnotizes.
Very good.
Jim chases Alice down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And is it live or is it Memorex? So
there you go. There's the Karen coming out in you.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Hatter. So what did you think about Jervis?
I thought he was an excellent, excellent character. A very different kind of villain on this show. The only thing that I was taken aback, and this is just my own personal stuff, but I just got finished with Marvel's Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. And the antagonist in that, if you haven't seen it, is a character called Kilgrave.
Right.
Who is all about, you know, mind control and having people do exactly what they want them to do. And so I've seen all of that Jessica Jones probably within the last 3 to 4 weeks. And so I've gotten a lot of that kind of character. So, you know, unfortunately Jervis didn't come across to me as deep of a character. And I know, I mean, this is one episode and I shouldn't even be in a comparison mode, but you understand where I'm coming from.
Oh,
I,
yeah. Most,
you
definitely.
Know, I've got all the background of Kilgrave and David Tennant doing that. And, for the introduction of the character, one that is not as well known in the Batman lore, I thought this was a great introduction for him.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I see, you know, it's been a little while since I watched Jessica Jones, but I see what you're saying. And yeah, drawing those comparisons, but he is a very interesting character, and I appreciated the actor. You know, the only thing of memory that I can remember him in is The Walking Dead, and plays you know, a very different character here. And just how put together, and I mean, they did a wonderful job with the costuming and the props that he wore, his technique in acting. And, I really like the introduction of, you know, we come in mid act to him, know, doing the typical, he's got everybody doing the, you know, the barnyard animals and, you know, hypnotized and that kind of stuff. But then when he steps it up and really picks out his mark and picks out the doctor there and hypnotizes him, does the whole look into my eyes, directly into my eyes, not above, not, you know.
Yeah, and not around. Yeah,
yeah, and the ticking of the clock, it just drew you in. And then him getting the doctor to do that feat of standing up on the back of the chair, it was just wild, and you could tell his scheming and type of things. And I really liked the interface in the back and forth that he had with Tabitha and Barbara.
Yeah,
because you know what type of background they're coming from, and Barbara hears what he's saying, and you can just see the wheels spinning in her head.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. can you make them do anything that right. you want them to?
Yeah. And it's just like, oh my goodness, this is going to be dangerous if, you know, they get the three of them together. But yeah, it's very cool. I liked, how he was on, you know, the hunt, you know, immediately to get, you know, a place to stay, and that quick phrase that he uses to implant that, you know, suggestion into the doctor was just wild. And, you know, seeing the doctor and his wife just fall to him, and he treats it like it's nothing. I mean, he's basically has the guy kill his wife. The guy's going to bury his wife and then kill himself. And, you know, Jervis is just living it up in the guy's house, taking his money, right. just throwing that around, and it's nothing to him. So it's interesting to see that kind of contrast with his desire to find his sister. Right. So what did you think about when he started talking about his sister? I mean, what kind of idea did you get about that, him and his sister?
Well, I, from the get-go, you know that's going to be, it's going to be a bad situation. I mean, there's just no innocently, you know, oh, I've been, you know, we've been taken apart from each other and, you know, we're trying to get back together. No, there was immediately some kind of big problem here. And I'm interested to figure out the origin of Alice and see where they can go with this. I did a little bit of research today and didn't find, unless I'm wrong, I didn't find a lot of comic reference to Alice. So this is, if I'm right, one of those areas that the writers and the showrunners can really have a good time in creating, mm-hmm. you know, something that, you know, that works into Jervis's character and gives him another angle, of a little bit of insanity. What I was waiting to see, and it didn't happen, and I don't know if it will at some point, but the ticking of the clock as it comes down, and he says it's in rhythm with your heart, and it slows down, and I'm waiting for the one time when it slows down and he just literally stops somebody's heart. I really thought it was going to happen in this episode. Mm-hmm. But I'll wait and see if that comes to be. But
yeah,
mm-hmm. you just hear it slow down, and you're just like, oh my goodness, he's just gonna off somebody.
Yeah, and his words are so powerful. I mean, that's what he makes a living on. But I mean, even when he's talking to the doctor's wife and just to scare her off, I mean, his impression, yeah, he's kind of scary. But just the words he use and the tone that he uses is just frightening. And the insight that he has, I mean, he goes and seeks out Jim. And I love that, you know, he comes to Jim with tea, you know, bringing the tea party to Jim. But
I love that Jim. I love that Jim turned around and poured his brandy or scotch or whatever it was right into it.
But he comes to Jim and he knows who Jim is. He's got that reputation. So obviously he's done his research. He knows who Jim is. But it's like he can look at somebody and tell the tells of that person. He knows mm-hmm. what's going to, whether it's just his ability or the amount of time that he's spent working his trade, but he knows what buttons to push, and he's a judge of people. And so he comes in, offers Jim double what the GCPD is paying to find his sister, but he also gives Jim enough background, I think, to make it worthy of Jim going to do it, because I think he understands that while Jim is about the money, he's got to have that somewhat still have that cause. And so he gives that story, whether that's all true or not. But right. it was interesting to kind of see the back and forth between the two of them.
It is very plausible. Although I did take hesitation when he said that he gave Alice over to Hugo Strange because when she had some type of blood poisoning. And mm-hmm. okay, so does that mean that he knew that Hugo Strange was doing physiological experiments on people? Because why would you take someone with a blood poisoning type of condition to Arkham? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, that sent up a real red flag for me when he was telling that part of the story.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder if Alice's time with Hugo predates Indian Hill. You know, maybe it was, you know, with the previous facility that they were at.
Quite possibly. Yeah,
just don't know. But that was like, okay, why would you? Yeah, why would you by choice? You know, I mean, I don't know, but it was very interesting. And so, kind of going back to the Hatter there, he is hypnotizing Barbara. And oh my goodness, you know, Tabitha suggests, hey, how about some levity? And he's gonna, make Barbara fall in love with him and then break up, and he doesn't realize who she is, that she's Stabby Babs.
And Tabitha's, oh boy. Yeah.
Oh,
here we go.
That was so good. So good.
But sensitivity to rejection.
Exactly. And that's an understatement. But yeah. Yeah. I'm very interested to see the three of them, if he realizes who they are and he uses them and they use him, or the back and forth. That's exciting to me, because it's, a bad guy, quote unquote, dynamic that's different than, the fish related story. So I like that about last season, that we had, different villains there that kind of rotated in the same orbit, but not necessarily directly tied to each other.
Right. And very different from Galavan's, rogues gallery of just insanity.
Mm-hmm.
This is very much a thinking man's team, if we put Tabitha and Barbara and Jervis together. So you're right. I mean, that could be very, very interesting.
Right. So, the Hatter, basically gives Jim the case, and Jim's had a very bad day. I mean, he's having this very, very awkward morning after conversation with Valerie. And
wow. Yeah.
I just, like, I'm cringing just seeing the dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah. She is just, no attachment, no feeling to it. Just, thanks, that was fun. And, he's trying, I'll stop by and, spruce up the place and all that. She's like, that sounds great. Whatever you want to do, And it was, it was bad. Oh,
yeah, yeah. It's, the kind of the reverse of what you would think about the typical one night stand, where it's the woman that's, playing that power. So, yeah. And so he is coming out of that. And so he's like, okay, let's go collect my money. And he gets to the GCPD and Lovin' Bullock's like, hey, let me get you some coffee. Come on, come on. And it's too late. And I was not particularly thrown off by Barnes' conversation when that scene started.
Oh, yeah, he's talking about highly gifted, intelligent, and all that. I was like, well, he can't be talking to anybody but Lee.
Well, like,
there's very little other choice.
He's not going to be talking that way to Jim, because that's the kind of the impression that they want to give you, because, it's like, okay, but, and so he's offering Lee her job back, and she's hesitant, and he's like, oh, you don't have to worry about Jim, he's not here, he's not affiliated. And she's like, okay, I'll think about it. And as soon as she walks out of the door, there he is. And it's like, okay, the awkward conversation number two for the day for Jim. And oh my goodness, they're having the conversation, and she's, saying that she's there moving back permanently, and her and her fiance, and she's treading lightly. I think that they both got hurt. They both have a respect for each other. They don't know what to do next, and it's awkward. And you know, neither one of them is succeeding well at it. So, it was hard, and you know, that's got to be a challenging circumstance. But, you know, it's just not boding well for Jim and making his day better.
I know, right? Well, my question is, what happens to Lucius if she decides to come back? I mean. Where does he have to go?
Well, so. I don't think we'll lose Lucius because he has a scientific background. I think
maybe more of a CSI type role. Yeah.
Right. I think he's got that tech background. I think he was filling in and doing some stuff with the bodies, but that's not like where he's trained for. Where she is, you know, the doctor and, you know, that type of range. So, you know,
that's true.
He can take, you know, a little more of the role that Ed had there, you know, doing those type of tech and that kind of stuff, you know. And so I don't think we're going to lose him from the GCPD because she's back. So,
right.
But, We'll loop back to Lee a little bit later, but so Jim gets his money, and then he gets the offer to go find Alice, and he's, you know, kind of on the case and wondering where to go, and he gets a hint from Selena a little later on, so he tracks down Alice's former employer the Narrows Bar. So taking that back to that area of Gotham, established in 1945. So that, you know, they'd been around for a while, but, she had cut herself and wanted to basically burn the place up because
the place down. Yeah.
Yeah. And the owner was not thrilled. And, you know, so he's kind of conveying some info to Jim, but, he's not going to leave until he gets all his answers. And, Jim has to fight off the thugs and deals with a bat to the back of the head. My goodness. And so it was just rough. So Jim has to get some stitches.
Yep.
And who does he run into there?
Well, we don't find out. And this is where I have to give a really huge apology. I made a statement last week about when we were talking about Lee coming back on the train. And I made the mention that, that Marconi was in her life and so on and so forth. And we didn't really, the episode didn't really say all that until this week. And so I really apologize if I gave that out as any kind of spoilery kind of a thing. That was not my intent. Because they make it clear that they didn't want us to know that until the dinner later on with Carmine. So, if I did that for anybody, I am so, so very sorry. So,
well, I mean, it's one of those things. Ed had been out there and he's been cast. It's just whether you look into that type of stuff, but,
I know that folks are sensitive about that stuff. So I'm sorry. So he's in the ER and he gets the stitches and he realizes that he's talking to Lee's new fiance who's you know very very much of what you would expect, and as soon as he figures out that this is Jim, he tells the story of, you know, how, you know, Lee and I are very happy and we, you know, I don't want this to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Are we good? And everything. And Jim's like, yeah, it's all good. You know, we're in the past and we moved on. It's fine. But if you ever hurt her, I'll have to track you down and kill you. And he smiles and walks off.
Yeah. I mean, Jim just not having, you know, Jim's very bad, horrible, bad, no fun day. So, you know, he leaves another awkward conversation, but he does get some information from the doctor. He finds evidently the maybe the hospital had some info on Alice, and so he's able to find Alice's apartment. Mm-hmm. And he hears this noise coming from the closet. And so he opens the closet, and out comes Alice's landlord, who has been turned crazy. We saw earlier that she's behind on the rent, and he was going to get that one way or the other. They get into a little slapping match, and he actually licks her blood. And we've learned from our friend the Hatter that her blood is poison, toxic, and it's basically ran him crazy. And thankfully, Alice shows up and kills him. But she's very concerned. Did any of the blood get on Jim? But she's bound and determined to burn it out, you know, to burn the guy out with fire. And so we are still asking these questions of what's going on. But she is confronted by the fact that Jim says, you know, listen, I'm here because your brother's looking for you. And she does not want to be found by her brother. And it's an interesting dynamic. We learn more later that she calls her brother evil, and she knows what type of character that he is. So Jim kind of goes to give Jervis the report and kind of get the scoop, because he feels like he's kind of been duped to finding somebody that doesn't want to be found. And the Hatter really has his way with Jim. So
yeah, takes him up to the roof and hypnotizes him, and tells him to get out on the ledge. And it would just be, you know, really tragic, is after all the trouble that Jim has gone through, you know, it would make perfect sense for him to take a leap, and the story could be put together, and so on and so forth. And thankfully Alice comes and stops him, and with her firing of the gun. Oh, we also find out that Alice shoots like a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
Because you know, Jervis is standing not 3 feet in front of her, and I think she hits him maybe once.
Yeah, but I think she wings him.
But she doesn't kill him, and she shoots all over the place and still can't get him at that point. So, but thankfully it wakes Jim up, and he comes back off of the ledge. She can't shoot, but she can pull a grown man from the ledge off of the side of a building.
Exactly.
And so they bring him up. He's very thankful, and then he cuffs her. So
yeah. So we will kind of pick that up next week, I believe. But yeah, it's so I really questioning the dynamic is this a true brother sister relationship, or is this
no?
One of those,
I don't buy it for a minute.
I don't either, and I think it's one of those crazy ones, you know, like we saw with Theo and Tabitha. But it just brings up all kind of questions. That, you know, are they brother and sister because of their background of both being experimented on? What's going on? I love it because it leaves us asking those questions, and
absolutely,
it's exciting to kind of see where that's going to go next. And it's really intriguing of, we see that the Mad Hatter's effects have a lasting effect, and you know, it's going to make things harder for Jim, and it's going to make, I'm sure it, you know, it's making Barbara more susceptible now to being hypnotized again more quickly. So it just raises a lot of questions and a lot of mystery, and I love that. I love when the writers bring up mystery, and they are, you know, content to play that out over episodes and not immediately give answers. And they've, you know, they've learned to do that well over the last couple seasons. So,
Right. Well, even Jervis's history, like I said, I did do a little bit of research. And, you know, this is a new iteration of, you know, his background, making him a hypnotist, making him a little bit younger, making him a full-grown man, which I thought was an interesting tidbit from Hatter's story. That apparently he was a very small man in a lot of the comic history.
Right.
But just their way of playing with these characters and not necessarily staying true to the comic lore, but making it such an engaging story. That's, well, that's why I love Gotham in general.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So we will we'll move on to is it Live or is it Memorex? So at the end of last episode, we get our clone, our doppelganger of Bruce, coming into Wayne Manor, and we picked that up, and we're kind of introduced to him. He's kind of giving a little bit of his story. He talks about the fact that he doesn't remember anything past a little over a year and a half, year or so ago, waking up in Indian Hill and being in a cell, being experimented on. All he knows of his name is his number, 514A or 5, and he was experimented on, doesn't have a whole lot of memory. He's, you know, he broke out, but he didn't spend, you know, much time at all with Fish and their crew. So he, you know, he's been kind of searching. You kind of get the idea of he's looking for stability. He's looking for a place. And he was shown kindness by Selina. And then he sees Selina with Bruce and he recognizes the face and he's like, oh my goodness. So he follows. And so we have this introduction, and I love the kind of the back and forth between Bruce and Alfred talking about Five, because it was just so cool to see that dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah, very much. And for Five to come in and almost act robotic in a way. You knew, I think Strange always had intended for Five to spend time with Bruce so that he would learn his mannerisms, so that he would be programmed to act like Bruce. In fact, I remember sending in feedback to you guys from the season two finale of saying, I thought that Five's role was to take over kind of the day-to-day of Wayne Enterprises. And I'm interested to see if that comes true, even with this, with him now styling himself after Bruce and so on and so forth. I mean, it's a little hard to be out in the open, I think, with Alfred and Bruce now knowing what's going on, but, I'm interested to see where they go with what the purpose behind Five is.
Yeah. And so Alfred is just like, get rid of him. But Bruce is like, I understand this, but I have got to know the purposes and the meanings behind stuff. And, you know, you see that growth. He's not as naive as he was before, but he wants answers. He's seeking out answers. He's looking for the reason behind Five Scar. And my personal thought is some of what Hugo did just basically cut off, you know, Five's ability to feel, because we see him basically burn his arm and not feel it. We see him get a hit to the nose and not feel it, but yet he's got these super quick reflexes and strength. So, you know, I definitely think that maybe Hugo was prepping him to be a Talon, to be that generation of Talon, and maybe if he could get what he did to fish in there to do both, you know, that would be great. But so we see Five kind of get pushed to the side when Selena comes in because Bruce doesn't want her to see him. And he's, even then he's watching, he's mimicking, and you see Bruce kind of divided because he wants to find out more information and he wants to help Selena, but he can't do both. And it's a lose-lose situation. By the way,
I have to give props to Carmen Bakandova. That was a really, really brilliant scene between her and Bruce.
Oh yeah.
I get it. I understand. And I love Bruce's calling her out of, you know, no offense, but you know, why usually don't care. but it was true. And she played it really, really well. It's like just a little bit of vulnerability that, you know, is in there, but she's never going to show. And just very, very touching, especially when Bruce reached out and took her hand and tried to console her. So yeah, just a very good, excellent work between David Mazouz and Carmen Bakandova.
Yeah, most definitely. I really enjoyed that. I really like seeing the growth of those characters, and that's exciting to see as we go through Gotham is kind of the dynamic between the two of those change and grow, and just the skills of the actor and actress just blossoming. And he got, you know, he's doing double duty this episode, playing two characters. And so, you know, Five kind of sees that. He sees that Bruce rejected her somewhat, and he's going to step in. So he steals some of Bruce's clothes, cuts his hair, steals the keys to the roller, the Rolls Royce, and basically goes and finds Selena, which is, you know, that's pretty good task there in Gotham City. Yeah. And then starts to play that character. I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot of time with Bruce, and so he's definitely going to be different than Bruce, and she kind of realizes that, but it's kind of exciting to her because he's paying attention. And it's going to be interesting, the dynamic between the two of them and what's going to go forward there. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the two of them and what kind of adventures that they're going to be on trying to maybe locate Ivy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we've got one more point that I didn't put in the storylines, but we've got kind of the continuation of the rise of the Penguin. And so the Penguin steps up, and Aubrey James has kind of been pushed forward by the officials to be interim mayor till there's another election. And I'm like, okay, the citizens are going to stand for this. And then here comes the Penguin, and I love it. He's making his stand. He's building on that character. And it's just so wild to see his growth from season one to season, and that dynamic of him being in charge and having that will to go forward and that planning, and he's standing up. This season, he just makes me smile, not because of what he's doing, but just the character and how Robin Lord Taylor plays him. And, you know, that is just so cool to see that he's going to run for mayor, and the people are behind him. So Aubrey James calls for a public meeting to kind of discuss things and try to put maybe push him to the side. And he comes prepped with three armed gunmen, but the Penguin has everybody else in the restaurant. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh, go.
You always one step ahead.
Yeah. Never three. Oh, but you know, he's talking and he hears what Aubrey James is saying about people behind him, and that makes sense. And he once again sees that, you know, he's got these political people who are helping him. He's got Butch who's in his camp, but he needs something more. And he realizes that he needs somebody who has the brains to do that. And who else but Ed can fill that role?
I do love, just to backtrack just a little bit, I love Butch trying to talk Penguin out of this. And then they walk in the room and all the people are there, like already, you know, with their jobs of getting him elected. And Butch is like, oh my God.
He's like, I've seen a lot of things in Gotham, but what scares me most is politicians. And I'm like, okay. Oh my goodness.
But that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
No. So Penguin leans a little bit on the new warden of Arkham and tells him that he can have any position in the city that he wants, or he can scrub the floors and clean up the inmates' latrines. It's up to him. Options.
Yeah.
so the warden examines Ed himself, as he says, and declares him sane. And I absolutely love Ed just standing there with this look on his face like, are you kidding me? Come on now.
Yeah.
Really? And, you know, then the murder of Kris Kringle. Oh, that's when you were insane. And officer, you know, insane. And officer, insane. And now I'm sane. You know, he's like, okay.
And he's asking those questions and he's like, who? And then up rolls the Penguin and he's like, I understand now. And I'm just so happy to see the two of those and what kind of mischief that they're going to be up to next. It's going to be so good. So yeah, overall, I really, you know, like I said, I know it was a setup episode, but I really enjoyed it because of the character dynamics, the lighter nature, less fish this episode. but truly, I do feel like that Gotham has given these actors, and most of them are newer to the business, have given the ability to grow. Yeah. And yeah, that gives me pleasure to see them grow in those skills. So when I see them on the screen and being a part of that, it just makes me smile. So like I said, I really enjoyed the episode. So yeah,
I did as well. And I'll go on the record and say, I am totally Team Lee and I am just counting down the episodes until it comes out that she's attached to Falcone and that gets her in some kind of peril. And Jim has to come save her, and that's the end of that. I'm not about this her being engaged to Falcone. That's just wrong. So
I'm looking at that, and so we find out from a little more of the Falcone history that
that was nice.
Basically, you know, he said, you know, listen, my wife and I promise that, you know, Mario would not be brought up in the family business. Marco would not be brought up in the family business. He's being a doctor. He's doing well. He's making us proud in his own right. He can't use the name. I understand that, you know, he's got that background. He understands where his family's from. And I really appreciate that he was really questioning Lee about her intentions, about Jim's intentions. I love your line about the women that are too beautiful. you know, that there's a real questioning there of, is she really over Jim? Is Jim really over her? Because I don't want my son to get hurt. And I'm in the camp of wanting Jim and Lee back together, but how that happens, I don't know. And I feel like we might get into one of those Godfather situations where the son gets pulled into the family business, not on purpose, and you know where that. So yeah, I'm really interested to see how that comes to. But I really, for Jim's sake, I want him to stand up and get out of this funk without it having to be Lee that necessarily pushes him out of that, so that he can be strong enough to be the man that Lee needs. So, we'll see.
I'm totally right there with you. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add?
No, it's a great discussion. It's a good episode. Thanks.
All right. So now it's time for a little feedback. So here we go. Meanwhile, in the Hall of Justice. Hey, it's Jeff here, and we are breaking into the recording and giving a little feedback here with Martin. He got this feedback in after we recorded, but I wanted to include it.
All right, Gotham Knights, this is Martin the Flash. I wanted to apologize for maybe being a little bit negative and sour sounding with my last call in because I wasn't impressed with the premiere episode. I didn't actually say too much about episode 2, which was a lot better. I actually really liked what they're doing with Poison Ivy, explaining why and how she grows so fast. I think that's a really, really cool way to develop her character. You know, the whole plant-like idea. Anyway, and a little bit what was going on with Penguin and him taking over the crowd. So all that stuff was cool. It was a better episode. Anyway, episode 3. You guys had said you hoped that by episode 3 I might be feeling better, and I do. And you know why? It's because where I think Gotham shines is when they focus on one main storyline bad guy. I guess you could call it a monster of the week, villain of the week, or whatever, but I think that style of storytelling suits Gotham because the Batman universe is so vast and there's so many characters, they can't fit so many of them into a 42-minute episode. When they pick one out of the crowd and give us a good story focused around that, like they did with the Mad Hatter, we get a great Gotham episode and a great story because it allowed him to develop. It allowed us to see beginnings of him grow into an antagonist and cause problems and it has to be solved. That's great. That's exactly where Gotham shines, in my humble opinion. And I found it far better. That's the best episode of the three. And if they can continue that kind of thing, I'll be happy. I'll be happy viewer again. Flash is out.
We have one of our loyal feedbackers, Chris, left us some feedback, and we thank you for that feedback, Chris. We know it was a short turnaround this week for everybody, and like I said, with a lot of TV shows coming on, we were fortunate to get some in. So, John, why don't you read what he has to say?
All right, Chris is always at it point by point, so here we go. Point number one, good introduction to Jervis Tetch. Makes me immediately interested to know more about him. Benedict Samuel should be pleased to know that the last person to play a Mad Hatter on TV, Sebastian Stan on Once Upon a Time, ended up doing okay for himself, albeit in the Marvel Universe. So, yeah, I agree. Benedict Samuel did a great job with the introduction. I look forward to where his character is going to go. Point number two. Bruce sporting his Michael Keaton look with the black turtleneck. Point number three. What a brilliantly filmed scene with Tetch standing in the hallway with the window behind him being illuminated by lightning. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Beautiful bit of cinematography there.
Yeah.
Point number four. Alice's landlord gives me a Jabba coming on to Leia vibe. Hard to imagine after the last scene that, but he was even creepier than Tetch. Yeah, agreed. Where are we? Point number six, maybe. So it seems like Alice has powers like Rogue from X-Men. Not as familiar with that. That'd be interesting to research.
Well, I don't. It's her touch. Rogue's touch. She's able to basically take life force and basically copy people's powers with their touch. So yeah, it's, you know, Alice has to worry about her blood, not necessarily her touch, but yeah, so we'll see.
There you go. So I got totally off track. This is actually point number six. Is there a Gotham soundtrack available? I just love Penguin's theme music. Yes, yeah, I totally agree with that.
I don't know that there's a soundtrack yet, but, you know, I could definitely see them doing one in the future of, like, you know, the best themes and that kind of stuff. So
is there one central composer? Like, I'm not familiar with, you know, a central composer for this show. Is there, do you know if there's one?
You know, I have not, being the music guy that I am, I still have not gone and looked. I believe there is, you know, maybe one composer doing the work. I just haven't investigated into it, so.
There you go. Point number seven. I'd vote for Penguin without hesitation. Even faster if he ran for president this year. Hey, we've still got a month. I think we can get him in there. So. Point number eight. I get the biggest kick out of Alfred saying, bloody hell, and calling people sunshine. Indeed. Point number nine, that gangster at the Narrows won't be hitting home runs anytime soon if that's all the power he can generate from a swing of the bat. Number 10, episode's not over, but I feel safe in declaring, oh, you always one step ahead, never three, to be the line of the night. 11, I love the sound effect of the ticking clock slowing down. Absolutely. We talked about that a little bit before. And the last, I love Ed's look of complete incredulity after being released from Arkham. Yes, we spoke about that. Totally. Just standing there like, oh, what? Chris says, I love this episode and gave it a very enthusiastic 9 out of 10 bogus certificates of sanity.
They'll give any one of those now.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, appreciate the feedback as always.
Thank you so much. So we would love to get your feedback. So you can do that a couple ways. So we're back to the standard deadline of Thursdays at 6 p.m. You can call 304-837-2278. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. There you can type out a message. You can attach an audio file or leave a message using the SpeakPipe widget. You can follow us on Twitter at GothamGSM. And please subscribe. Just go to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes.
Yeah, I would also just give a plug for the listeners out there, and I need to do this myself, and I will, to leave an iTunes review for Gotham Undercover. And as many of the GSM podcasts as you want to and are familiar with, the reviews that you leave help elevate the overall, you know, PR of the podcasts. And Karen and Jeff do an outstanding job with this one. And I think it would mean a lot to them to hear from us and with, you know, all the good ratings that we could provide there. So I'm going to encourage everybody to get out there and get on that iTunes review.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the challenge is, you know, out there in the TV universe, there are a lot of podcasts about different shows, and we try not to tread on each other's toes, but having that iTunes rating kind of gives us the ability to raise our standing and let people know that we're out there. So appreciate that. So next week is called New Day Rising, and the summary is as follows. The Penguin gains power as he narrows in on the nomination for mayor of Gotham. Meanwhile, Gordon turns Alice into the GCPD for the bounty. Also, Bruce and Alfred race to find Bruce's doppelganger after learning he's assumed Bruce's identity in the all new Mad City New Day Rising. And so we're looking forward to it. It looks like it's going to be an exciting episode from what we see from the previews. And
That preview left me a little bit chilled. And episode in general, episode 4 seems to be one that really the showrunners and writers really try and knock it out of the park and really make a statement about, you know, what these seasons are going to be about. Mm-hmm. So I always kind of, have a special place in my heart for episode 4 of each season. So I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, we thank you very much, John, for helping us out. Where can people find you?
I am on social media on Facebook. I am John McGrail in Salisbury, North Carolina, and I am also a fellow Golden Spiral Media podcaster on Stuff I Learned Yesterday. And we get ourselves up underway for our third and final season on this coming Monday, October 10th as well. So that's looking forward to that.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank you for tuning in, and talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, guys.